Welcome to another Directions Magazine podcast. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor. This is the third in a series of interviews I've been doing with Penn State's Anthony Robinson about the development of what I'm considering to be the first GIS MOOC. It goes live on July 17th.
I'm at the ESRI Education GIS Conference in San Diego, California, and joining me in person is Anthony Robinson from Penn State, and we're going to have our third in our set of conversations about the development of the Maps and the Geospatial Revolution MOOC.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for having me.
Okay, so we're just a few weeks out of the start of the course, right?
Yep. Actually, it's like a week and a half from today. So on July 16th at midnight, when it begins to be July 17th, that will be the official opening of the course.
So how are things looking? Everything's done pretty much?
The course is 99% prepped. There's little tiny things that I'm in there playing around with right now in the content and other stuff that I just want to change. But yeah, the main stuff is all in there and ready to go.
Okay, so what were the big challenges in this last month or so as you've been putting this together?
We did a lot of work on video production to try to make things come across as sort of comfortable as possible in terms of the lectures that I like to do, and then also have a little bit of flair. There's a little bit of graphics and things like that that happen inside each of the lectures, and that took a lot of time. Creating a lot of the assessments takes a lot of time in the Coursera learning management system, and also making things look good with pictures and things like that is surprisingly difficult in their environment. So I've actually spent a lot of time in that kind of thing.
Now, when you say it's hard in their environment, I mean, you can find pretty maps. That's not hard.
I'm pretty comfortable making examples and stuff like that, taking pictures, and that's easy for me to do and kind of fun. The challenging thing has been embedding that kind of stuff in the class itself to make it look nice. One issue we struggle with a little bit is making it, for example, easy to click on a map and see a bigger version of that map, because we don't want a full resolution picture right in the middle of the course content, but we'd want it to be possible for people to go and interrogate those things. And Coursera's learning management system leaves a lot to be desired when it comes to easily managing assets like that, where other systems are much, much better in terms of that kind of thing right at the moment.
And you said you were working on the videos.
Yeah.
Now, how did you do the videos so that it seemed like you were talking to somebody? Was there actually somebody there while you were recording?
One piece of equipment we actually did purchase was a teleprompter, and not like a crazy expensive one, but just moderately expensive one that lets me plug in my laptop or any other VGA sort of video source to it. And then I could look right into the camera and I could see my desktop or my slides or whatever it is I wanted to see. And I did it that way so that I could try to keep it somewhat spontaneous. And this is going to sound weird. Why are you using a teleprompter to be spontaneous? But the way I would give a lecture normally in class is I would maybe create some slides and stuff like that, and then I would have a conversation around them in the course. And I wanted to replicate that as much as possible in the MOOC without having a crazy script or something like that to read to make it sound like a big infomercial. This way I could create a really short slideshow just for myself to see in the lens of the teleprompter, and then I'm actually looking at the camera, and what the viewer doesn't understand is that I'm actually seeing slides that are prompting me to talk about certain points. And whenever there are graphics, though, we recorded screen capture of my laptop screen while I did all these videos, and we used that to move in stills of the graphics that I developed whenever there needs to be something that the students will see. So they'll always see me talk if there's any kind of text on a slide, for example, and they'll only ever see a slide if it's actually graphical. So I wanted to keep it so that they weren't just looking at slides or my head in the corner or something crazy like that, but just much more casual, I guess. Personal. Somewhat more personal, more engaging. We have this amazing video intern that we just sort of lucked out and came upon. He's helped in some cases to take those graphics actually off of a slide and put them around me and stuff like that as I'm talking. So if I talk about the places mentioned in a tweet or something, he puts it right beneath me. And he does some neat stuff with that that actually makes it even less awkward from switching back and forth between a slideshow or something like that, which was what I was going to default to do.
Well, that sounds like it's very comfortable. Was it comfortable for you to do it, and it'll be comfortable for the students to watch it?
It was hard to do. It never felt comfortable to me, but I developed a workflow around it. So I guess that's the way I would describe it, is that I still am a little bit nervous about it because some of them have little tiny parts that I would change. But I didn't want to edit everything and create like these crazy montages where there are 100 different cuts here and there, and I get like the absolute perfect thing at the end, but then it's all vanilla. So if I stumble on my words once or twice in one of the videos, then that's because I did almost every one of those videos in one take. After doing them, three or four times, I took one that I really liked and we ran with that. There's only one or two where we ended up like splitting it in half and using half of one take and half of another.
Okay, so that's a challenge for people who are taking the class.
There's the Easter egg. Yeah, there's actually another Easter egg in the videos that I won't spoil. But
cool.
I've been trying to have fun with the class like that.
Well, it's a lot of work. You want to have some fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, talk a little bit about putting together the assessment.
So the assessment part is difficult. I found it especially challenging for this because I usually teach upper level undergraduate courses and map design and things like that, where assessments are never multiple choice question quizzes or check all that apply things. It's, did you make a nice looking map? And I grade that on an individual level. And that's how I'm used to doing assessments. The other classes I teach are also graduate level seminars, where it's interrogating somebody's writing or the strength of their argument. So it's also very qualitative and individualized. This class is more about basic geospatial competencies. And so you can test on, do you understand what this acronym means, or name another GPS equivalent system that helps you do navigation and things like that. So I tried to tie it in pretty explicitly to the course text that I wrote. I drew upon each of the lessons to develop quiz questions. And then for the final exam, I munged together things from earlier lessons and then what I cover in the fifth week together. And there are mixtures of multiple choice quiz questions, check all that apply kind of questions. And then you can do graphical examples in Coursera and quiz questions, which is pretty nice. So I can say, this map is an example of a thematic map, yeah, or choropleth or whatever. And I can swap those examples out. So that's one way to maybe ask the same type of question later on in the class without using the same exact example, visual example anyway. So they're not very sophisticated in how they let you do those kind of assessments, but there are some potentials there to create things. And you can have it, for example, it'll randomize options for different quiz questions if you want to. I didn't get that sophisticated this first time around because it's somewhat hard to come up with multiple options for somewhat basic things in geospatial stuff. It's not like there's multiple interpretations of many of the things I'm trying to assess. So I could, you know, ask the question in the reverse manner or something like that to develop options. But Coursera will, to its credit, the platform is good at actually making it so that it's possible to take that quiz three times and never really see the same exact thing each time, at least not in the same order and possibly with different options. So there's ample opportunity for me to improve the assessments over time, too, as I figure out kind of what works and what doesn't.
Now, how do you figure out how many questions are going to be in each week's quiz?
I didn't try to standardize that. I decided I didn't want more than like 20 in a given week. And I didn't want less than 10, and I ended up with like, you know, 15, 17, 13, 17, and 18 or whatever. And then the final exam, I think, is 50 questions total or something like that. And it wraps up the whole course. What I tried to stick with really were, what are the core things I expected people to know from each lesson? That's what drove me.
So go back to the learning objectives, go back to the lessons,
look at all the content and say, okay, what did I want someone to get out of this section? Do they really understand this topic? And some of it reflects my biases too. I mean, I want people to know how to correctly identify a choropleth map and not say choropleth. You know, so there's little things in there that I do kind of nail.
Your pet peeves.
I drill people on. Yeah, yeah. It reflects my class. You know, that's me. It's not a completely
generic
saccharine thing. Yeah.
Well, and that's, I think, a lot of what makes it appealing as a student is that you're getting some of the teacher's personality and their biases and their interests.
I hope so. I mean, once in a while, I just got tired of making quiz questions and I would have fun with some of the alternative answers. But I think that's your obligation as a professor at some point to play around with it a little bit. And for the students who are paying attention, they'll get a kick out of the fact that you actually had a sense of humor in the middle of your assessment.
Well, let's hope they
I hope so. Yeah, yeah, we'll see. With 26,000 opinions, I'm sure there will be more than a handful that are disagree with that approach.
Now, what do you think the students are going to have the most trouble with as you put together all their different assignments?
I suspect that it will remain difficult to narrow down what exactly geography is. So we as geographers are very comfortable with the idea of geography being a very broad, all-encompassing, sweeping thing. Every problem has a geographic answer. And I certainly am preaching that gospel in this class. I suspect some students will not necessarily accept that as an argument. So in the second lesson of the class, I talk about why I think spatial is special, and I invoke things about spatial thinking. And I'm guessing that there will be non-trivial group of people that think that spatial is not special. It's just a different case or something along those lines. And there may be some people that wrestle with geography having kind of a very diffuse identity, which geographers always have dealt with as well, right? So I think that'll probably play out in the class. I think some people will be like, wow, geography is everything. That's great. And others will be like, wait, I still don't know what the heck geography is. And so I'm interested to see if that happens. In terms of the technical stuff, I think it's possible that we may have people that have browser compatibility issues with using the lab assignments. I don't know yet if the lab assignments will be effective at reinforcing the concepts to thousands of people who may come at it with very different life experiences from all over the world. I'm an academic who works in the United States, and I'm shaped by my experiences, and the little crazy things that I tell stories about and the jokes I make or whatever are very much how I would teach a class, but they may completely fall flat with some audiences. Some people may grapple with that. They may expect a really 100% serious experience all the time, which they're not going to get in the class. I think another possible area that'll be tricky will be the geospatial professionals that have signed up to take it. It's not designed to support geospatial professionals. It's not designed to teach someone who's already a geospatial guru to become smarter at that stuff.
But you've requested they play a special role.
Yeah. And I have asked those people to really take ownership of that and participate in the forums and help people out and assist with interpreting problems or finding data sets and all the things that we know how to do. Be good citizens. But I'm sure there will still be others who are like, how come you didn't cover this this particular issue? I've had random people contact me and ask me whether or not the class was going to go into transformations in Postgres SQL. And I don't know.
No.
I don't know what course they were looking at, but it wasn't mine. At least I don't think it was. So that gives me a little bit of pause that there may be sizable communities of people that for whom I'm not going to meet their expectations. So that's a little bit of a concern. But on the whole, I mean, at this point, I'm just ready to press play and let it
see what happens.
Let it pan out. Yeah.
Now, in addition to the formal assessments and the quizzes, there are sort of peer commenting opportunities.
Yes. So there we'll have one formal peer review assignment and multiple other discussion assignments that will effectively play that role too. In some of the earlier lab assignments, the discussions will be about share your maps about hazards, for example, and talk about those things. So they're effectively doing some informal peer review there. We will have a formal peer review assignment for the final lab, which is in lesson 5, which is about telling a story with a map. And in that one, students will be, as long as they submit a map to be reviewed, they'll get 3 other submissions from other students to review, and I've created a rubric for them to use to make those grading decisions. And that has some weight in the final grade. It's not enormous, and it's not so much that if somebody slams you unfairly that you're not going to do well in the class. But I did want to create something in there that would speak to the fact that the final assignment is not something that it would be easy to quiz on. The other things I could kind of pick out from lab materials, something that I could put in the quiz to make sure that they understood the concepts I was trying to drill into them. Whereas the final assignment is much more self-directed. You know, I want you to go out, now you know how to use things, go find a map, go find some map data, tell a story around a map, help people understand what story you're trying to tell by writing a little narrative about it, contribute that in whatever way you want. It could be an image, it could be a link to an active web service. I created the option in that lab to go out and use, if you want to use, you know, QGIS or whatever, a desktop system, UDIG. If you have ArcGIS for some reason you're taking this class, knock yourself out. I created a tiered option there. So for sort of easiest, not so easy, and then expert level. And I'm interested to see if students take advantage of that, the ones that maybe really catch on quickly, if they take advantage of the opportunity to go and try a new software system for the first time. So we'll see what happens with that. I just felt like it was awkward to force that final assignment where I say, okay, now go play and tell me what you can discover and tell a story with maps, to only limit that to using just the ArcGIS Online service, especially knowing that there will be some people at that point who are really motivated, possibly, who want to go and try something else. Or for the people that are professionals who are already taking the class, they may be used to very different platforms for creating things. They could come up with something very sophisticated, and I want that to be shareable in the class. That should count.
Right, and that's a real opportunity for the other students to see.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I didn't want to kind of artificially cut that off. I felt like that would be an interesting opportunity to see if, and who knows? I mean, that's me tinkering around with whether or not you can get away with such an assignment in a MOOC. And this is an example of kind of the fun things you can do with these kinds of classes where the normal rules for what we do just don't apply. I can't assume that everybody will have X, Y, or Z certain skill sets. Some people will violate all those norms right away.
So I think right now we're at 26,000 people registered?
Yes. As of this morning, it was 26,000 people, and the pace of enrollment seems to be increasing as we get closer to the start date, which is apparently typical for a Coursera class. So probably safe to say that it'll pass 30,000 people by the time it begins, which is an incredible number that doesn't make sense to me. as a class, it just doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, just like 30 people would be a big class of cartography students, 30 people, you know. Some of the classes we teach at Penn State Online are 120. And to us, that's a big class that warrants having extra grading assistance. And, you know, we put a lot of resources into doing that well. So 30,000 people is, I can't quite entirely conceive of that yet.
Now, do you have teaching assistants, or is it really just you?
It's just me. It's me and my learning designer, Aaron Long. And some of my colleagues back at Penn State said that they'll volunteer to sit in as I can make them teaching assistants in the course, and they can go in and delete discussion posts that are abusive or whatever. Yeah, yeah. Or if they can be canaries in the coal mine a little bit, and if there's some issue that I'm not seeing right away, they can help me with that. But that's a huge challenge of these kinds of things, is how do you monitor progress of the course with thousands of people providing feedback all the time, everywhere in the world? Like, I can't stay up late enough to beat it. You know, it's people are waking up to the other side of the world by the time I'm going to bed, and they're going to start saying that they, you know, don't understand this concept or whatever. And so I'm eager to see what happens when that occurs, but I'm also a little afraid. I won't lie.
And that's one of those places where the existing GIS professionals who are in the course could step up.
And that's my hope.
And point someone in the right direction.
Yeah, that's definitely my hope. And I hope to reinforce that a few times throughout the course through announcements and the like, and say, you know, listen, if you're still here and you're hanging on, you find this interesting, but you're mostly just watching, and you're a geospatial professional, or you've got, you know, academic experience in this area, step into the forums and help people out. You know, there are going to be people that, for whom this is the absolute first time they've ever even considered that they could make their own map. And that's really the exact person I'm hoping to reach with this kind of class, but they also are likely to be the people that need the most attention and maybe need someone to explain things even simpler than I have. I don't know if I got the right balance or not. I don't have feedback yet in the class. And there may be language issues, and there's all kinds of stuff like that could come up. So I do hope that, and it does seem that this happens in many MOOCs, that the community itself around the class supports the community. So it's not the instructor alone who lords over the whole thing and curates the entire course. It's not even possible for that to be what happened. Having said that, I do plan on watching over it as much as possible. I'm just fascinated that anybody cares. Honestly, it's incredible that anybody cares like that. That's just, that impact is enormous. So people all over the world, you know.
Now for the 5 weeks that's going to be happening. Do you have other responsibilities? Are you prepping other courses at Penn State?
Yeah, I mean, my job.
Your life is just going on.
My job continues. In fact, I mean, it's probably, I'm assuming I've done more intense work prepping the class than I will have to watching it. We'll see. Maybe I've done enough work in advance that it should more or less roll on its own, and I'll be making little changes as things prop up, but I don't know. I'm not like off of work or anything like that. I still lead our online programs. I have, you know, 30 faculty and staff that coordinate all of our stuff. We have a new semester that starts right in the middle of this. I teach another class that begins in the middle of this class. So life goes on, notwithstanding the fact that I've had plenty of people email me and complain that I'm offering a class during the summer and they're on vacation. So why would I do that? So, which is a really interesting notion, since I don't have vacations. I would love that. That's why I'm teaching in the summer, because to me the concept of vacation in the summer is quaint.
Now, I've spent a lot of time asking you about what makes you nervous, what worries you about the class. Let's go to the other side. What do you feel really confident about?
I'm confident that the overall content I selected to focus on is the right balance of stuff to get someone from kind of 0 to 60 on making maps for the first time and understanding them. If they stick with the class from the first week to the fifth week, someone who completes that stuff successfully, if they, you know, earn the certificate or whatever it is, and they've done well on the quizzes, participated in discussions, I would feel confident you know, recommending that person to take another class with us or someone else. I would feel like they're ready to take a quote-unquote real GIS class and really go deeper in another level. And I'm really excited about that. I hope that happens. I am feeling like that probably will happen. I've already had, you know, informal contacts with random people that have Googled me and found me because of the MOOC or whatever, and have said that they're interested in doing that kind of thing. So I do think there is an audience there to tap into that geography can benefit from. And I'm hoping that that will actually happen through this. And I do feel pretty good about that. I also feel like the lab assignments are in really good shape. And I hope that doesn't jinx it, but I do feel like we've done our homework. The education team at Esri has been really amazing at, for example, we looked at all the resources that we're pointing to in the labs and making sure that Esri is hosting a version of them so that if we're relying on a USGS service or something like that, that it won't be up to USGS to keep that thing going. If it dies or whatever, we've got our own copy. Yeah. And in fact, we've just preemptively done that. So we've taken all as much of the risk out of that as possible in terms of the hosting layers and stuff like that. Because that gets problematic in ArcGIS Online. It's like if you have one of your layers that's hosted by someone else and it's slow, it seems like it's not working. People start to question whether or not the platforms are okay, blah, blah, blah. So I'm quite confident, done our homework on trying to make sure that that stuff will be robust. I'm sure that there will be tons of people that wish it worked differently or, you know, have issues with browsers or whatever, and we're just going to have to see what happens with that. I've gone through all the labs quite a bit. Joseph did a great job of starting them off. He likes to use wholesome examples, and I try to make them a lot saltier. So I think we're a good combo.
There's a nice mix of sweet and salt.
Yeah. Like, he's like, you know, everything he comes up with is super, like, wholesome, and we're going to, you know, create a park to save some, you know, little type of mouse or whatever. And I'm like, where can we get the pizza with the most meat on it? You know, that's my... So it was fun working with him on that because I was able to kind of recast things a little bit. But I do feel really good about those examples. I mean, they are pretty cool. I'm especially excited about working with some of the hazards data and some of the social media stuff that people will be doing later on, where there will be the chance to work with things that have just happened. So that's, in my opinion, an aspect of the geospatial revolution that's important to really emphasize, and I was hoping that would come out in the labs. And I do think that goal has been achieved for the most part. I mean, we've got more than a few examples in there that will probably challenge people's notions of what can be mapped.
It sounds great. It sounds like you are ready to go.
Yeah, I can't wait for it to start.
All right. Well, hey, I really appreciate you taking the time over these last few months as this course has been in development. And maybe when it's all over, we can come back and talk about how it went.
That would be great.
That would be awesome.
No, thanks for talking, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us for another Directions Magazine podcast. If you'd like to comment on today's discussion, you can email us at editors@directionsmag.com. You can leave a comment at Directions Magazine where this podcast is hosted, or you can send us a tweet @DirectionsMag. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.